This week, Wall Street cut $60 billion off the value of major media companies based on this kind of cord-cutting fear. Somebody, who was it, was talking at a conference and said...
ESPN.
It was ESPN's. Their revenues are down for the first time.
It sounds like the TV business is finally acknowledging that cord-cutting might impact their business over the long term, which until recently they were in real fierce denial mode about.
Well, it's confusing because you read these statistics. ESPN, which is traditionally the cable channel people will pay the most for, they make the most money, something like $6.25 per subscriber. For them to make less is a big deal. But then you also hear statistics. People are watching more broadcast television than ever before. So I don't know which is true, but obviously media stocks really took a hit. Walt Disney, 21st Century Fox, and Viacom. Although the CEO of Cablevision said, not so fast, it's not that bad. We don't see, he told the Wall Street Journal, we don't see a landslide of cord cutting in the near term. James Dolan. Now, of course, he's talking to investors.
Right.
So he's trying to shore up the stock. He says, I don't think the sky is falling quite yet. Nevertheless, Cablevision shares fell 2.7% on Friday. And 5% over the 2 days.
Leo, the key way to think about any of these changes is we are beginning to see a whole generation think about television not as television, but something on demand. And then you have a generation behind them who think of video only in terms of devices, which they can hold in their hand and they can touch.
I think that's exactly right.
And so 10 years forward, you know, these guys may, you know, stem the losses for a little while, do some financial engineering. 10 years down the line, the behavior of the consumer is very different. That's when, you know, it's not cord cutting. It just is a different behavior.
They're not watching television at all.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this whole notion that, you know, live sports is going to save their bacon and live events. I don't know. We don't know, like, what the consumers of tomorrow are going to, you know, adapt to these things or not. Like, I don't know. I am really interested in trying to figure out how people consume television in the next 5 years to actually make a reasonable call on, like, what the future looks like. But this one thing is for sure, the way things were, that's gone. Like that, you know, $60 billion or $600 billion in their market cap, that just is irrelevant. These companies have been sitting and doing absolutely nothing, and that's why they are beginning to suffer.
Well, cable companies first and then networks next. I mean, I think the networks are in denial about the fact that people aren't even watching TV. Go ahead, Jill. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's been some really great stories about MLB, which was one of the first leaders, I think, in getting to the online space. So the MLB TV people, Major League Baseball, were really trying to offer some kind of online experience early on. They knew that they had a worldwide audience of people watching baseball who couldn't always watch it because they didn't have U.S. network television. So in the early days of MLB TV, it was awful. It was like watching a pixelated video game, you know, frame by frame. It was terrible. But they stuck with it and they developed it out. And we're an MLB household, so we use it quite frequently. But
at 3 in the morning, unfortunately.
I have to start the game because I'm allowed to see the final scores.
Ah.
So I'm in charge of starting the game.
I see.
But yeah, after the fact. But what happened was HBO hired some people from MLB who had worked on
right.
that product.
HBO Now was HBO based on MLB.
Now,
yeah,
exactly. And they said, we really need somebody who has expertise. And nobody had any expertise.
Including their own giant in-house, very expensive HBO Go team up there in Seattle.
Right.
Who
except
all left.
For the MLB people. So I think, and I think HBO has been a huge story this year. Yeah. Once they offered that a la carte service, that's going to be a real, I think it's going to set the tone for a lot of other channels.
ESPN went over the top with Sling TV.
I think Sling has been a big deal. I think we'll look back at Sling as having been really important.
Yeah. Yet I think the real problem is exactly his own points out. I have two kids, 23 and 21. The 23-year-old will watch Netflix, she'll sit down in front of a TV set She was not. She's a cord cutter in that sense. She's not watching live programming. She's watching on-demand programming off the internet. The 21-year-old won't do that. He watches YouTube, and that's it. And I feel like that's really, I mean, you're missing the boat if you're thinking, oh, the next thing is over the top. As I think you nailed it, which is TV watching itself has changed completely, and people are using mobile devices. They're not watching TV. They're consuming content in some completely different way.
I think what it does is it, you know, it basically all the economics of our television and entertainment ecosystem is built on mass audience, right?
Right.
And we are going into more, you know, like fractional audience over a long period of time. And there will be hits and there will be some people who will do really well with the hits, like, you know, HBO and True Detective or Sopranos type of shows will succeed.
You think there's a future for that kind of programming, that kind of event programming?
Absolutely. I think great storytelling is great storytelling.
Yeah.
Whether you tell them through, you know, in an you tell them as a poem or you tell them as a movie or as a, you know, running TV series. Great stories are great story. There will be far, the focus has to be on finding that interesting thing that people are glued to. But most of the viewing is going to be fractional. So the economics of the industry changes not from mass audience, which is like mass audience, put lots of television, charge lots of money, and go home. Whereas fractional is, everything is just, you know, up for grabs. Maybe we need to be thinking really, really hard about paid content, subscription models, which are entirely different than what they are today. I think Netflix works because it is actually an interesting business model, not because it has the best content. It's like they figured out that for $10 a month, people are okay putting up with, you know, a lot of average content as long as they find something to see on a daily basis.
We don't really care as long as there's colors and people moving. It doesn't really matter what it is.
But think about it this way. How much time do you have in your day anymore to watch television?
Right.
Like, let's take what's happening in our society right now. If you don't have full-time jobs in the middle class, people are going to work 2, 3, 4 jobs. They're going to do, right, to make ends meet. They're not watching television. They will watch television within, you know, all these things they're doing and finding. We'll have to steal time to entertain ourselves.
Does that mean short form is going to be more successful?
Not like 2-minute videos, definitely, but I'm sure, you know, there will be, like, somebody might come up with a new form.
It's hard to tell a story. In fact, you're seeing really the opposite when you think about the fact that these HBO shows like Game of Thrones or True Detective really are 30 or 40-hour movies. They're not even 2-hour movies. They're spread out, but they're a lot of hours. We've gotten better at a long story arc than ever before. We like those long stories.
How about like a 2-hour news screensaver?
It is 2 hours, as a matter of fact.
Well, it feels like it's like half hour.
Good. I like it. Thank you, Om. Rock on.